originally the application, one of the things we've been talking about is nitrogen. The BOD and the TSS that they're allowing, what I just mentioned, total suspended solids and biochemical oxygen demand. I cover that again in the next section, but their discharge rate that they're allowing are 30 milligrams per liter of each. And that's the same thing as the municipal waste. It's also the same thing as that they're having the whole ocean's discharge amount. It's a low amount of effluent. So, I mean, it's a good quality effluent compared to what a lot of industrial processes might discharge. Nitrogen is something that has been talked about a fair amount because of the concern for either algae blooms or damage to eelgrass if it hits the shore. And that was discussed in the modeling that was done by Ransom. And what was originally in the model was using 23 milligrams per liter because that was their original proposed amount of nitrogen discharge. The license is actually allowing 21 milligrams per liter, and this is a maximum, not an average. So they should be discharging less than what was modeled. In looking at the research of what is harmful in the bay, I spent a fair amount of time trying to read up on different options and fact check what was discussed. They're saying the existing nitrogen level in the bay is 0.17 milligrams per liter. When you add the 0.21 that is expected at the outfall, then you end up with a total amount roughly 0.4 or so at the discharge point, and then it's dispersed into the flow. The model doesn't take into account wave action or wind action in the ocean, so it's supposed to be conservative on what the actual dispersion is. And it says that in the literature that 0.35 to 0.5 is cited as a range of no adverse impact. So basically, right at the very outfall, you're a little bit higher than that number, but it soon disperses, and that's the information that's in the modeling that shows the plume that is proposed. Now, because it's a model, it was right in the application in the study that was done by Ransom saying that this should be verified by dye testing. And that is a criteria that's in the DEP's licensing. The one thing about this is that they aren't requiring the dye test until full build out of 7.7 million gallons per day of flow. So that's something the board might consider if this is going to be something that takes a really long time to happen. Now, we don't know exactly what the schedule will be to reach full build out. Maybe they'll want to set a time schedule to say this, you know, within a couple of years, you'd want to see the dye test rather than waiting. And this is basically to check and see that everything is dispersing the way that was expected and things are flowing in the directions that were expected.
Would there be any problem with having the dye test done immediately after plant construction? Like when the plant is initially when it started up?
Well, I think the problem with that would be, I mean, no, there's no problem doing it, but the problem would be that you wouldn't necessarily see the impacts of the full discharge. You get some kind of initial feedback, or maybe wait till, I don't know how quickly the flow is going to get up to a certain rate that would make it worthwhile doing that. But if 7.7 is way down the road until complete build out and something changes, then, you know, maybe it's years before you actually do the testing. So I guess I'm not sure what the right number to say is. When it gets to three, it's the right time to do it versus another time. But I think you don't want to have a little bit more than just the first initial flow to make it worthwhile, because you're looking to see what this big amount of quantity disperses over a big area. And if it's a small quantity, I don't think it'll be as meaningful.
Yeah. I have a question. Mandy, many times when we speak of these numbers, they talk about in the bay. And I'm having a little bit of a difficult time defining what the bay is. What is the parameter of the bay? How many square miles is there in the bay? Do you have any insight on that?
I'm afraid I really don't. I mean, I know that this is going out 4,000 feet, but that's the best I can really give you as far as, you know, I don't have good information about the overall bay. There is information probably in this literature, but it's such a mountain to deal with, I can't just pull it off the top of my head.
Okay, because, you know, sometimes when you get the dilution factor, it's good to know the size of the bay to sort of understand how diluted it's going to become. So, all right.
Sure. Thank you for that. Yeah. Understood.
Jeff Gilchrist first on Desi.
Yeah, I wanted to piggyback on Declan's question a little bit, and you sort of answered a question I had, but I was reviewing Upstream Watch's submittal, and they were asserting that doing modeling beforehand and then doing the dye testing after it was all built out was worse than just doing the dye testing now. So I think you maybe addressed that a little bit in your answer to Deck, but can you say why, if that seems like a better strategy, or is it not useful to do a dye test now or not possible?
Well, I'm not sure how accurate it would be. If you don't have the pipe there and you don't have the flow coming out, then I don't know. You can simulate something, but I don't think you're really checking the model like you're supposed to with real life physical data if you don't have the outfall there. One of the things I think that there's two different things going on here. One is the outfall dye testing to check the plume and which direction it goes. And the other part is that there's actual ambient water quality monitoring in the bay that is going to be required. And that's going to be done before and after. And that's going to start within 6 months, I think, of construction starting. But go on. So there's kind of two different things. One is really to just look and see if the dispersion modeling is accurate. And the other is to monitor water quality throughout. So that the water quality monitoring, there's no reason that can't start right away.
Daisy?
Great. I wonder if you can speak to the virus disinfection or the disinfection in general of the UV light. So you say that you need to have a certain quality of effluent for the UV disinfection to be effective. So how do you feel about the proposed quality of effluent? Do the numbers that they're required to hit based on the state laws mean that their effluent will be within that quality range?
Yes, the filtration. What you don't want is solids. You're shining a light down on what you hope is clean water with viruses in it. If there are solids there that block the light from accessing the microorganisms that are leaving, then they aren't killed the way that you're intending to. So with this kind of screening, I mean, it's at a much higher level. You know, when they say it's a much smaller screen, it sounds like it's lesser, but it really means it's taking out much more solids, more fine. It does increase the quality. So if everything's operated properly, then it should work. Now, some wastewater treatment plants, because this can vary in quality, because they see a lot more variety of what might come down the pipe. It's not always the same thing, where this should be a fairly, it won't be consistent in concentration, but it'll be a consistent in source and type of waste, then you might have an upset in your plant or something. And so if that happens, you could have a poor quality, and they might use chlorine and then dechlorination. But that's not ideal because you're adding chemicals. So, I mean, in concept, UV is a better way to do it because you're not putting chemicals out in your effluent.
Right. And then I have a question about the dispersion. So the effluent is a maximum of 0.21 milligrams per liter in the pipe, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then when it hits the outfall zone, that 100 foot long length where it's dispersing into the water. So we could expect, if you grab a sample in that area when it was operational, that you'd get 0.4 milligrams per liter. Is that right?
That's the way that the modeling was put together. Yes. I mean that, and again, I think it's kind of worst case scenario as far as, you know, if those two numbers were there, that there's not going to be any mixing that happens like immediately, but you're just assuming the worst.
Okay. So basically it's the addition of the bay water, the 0.17 milligrams per liter bay water that brings the effluent down to that 0.4 milligrams. Is that right?
No, if you add the two together, like you've already got some in the seawater and then you've got some in your effluent, when they mix right together, then the thought is that you have 0.4, but in reality, you've got the flow of both. So it doesn't necessarily, it's not necessarily additive, but I think that's how it's modeled.
Because 0.4 milligrams is less than 21 milligrams, right?
Yes. Yeah, so, I think I have some decimal points.
So I just wanted to make sure I understood how the effluent lowers its concentration. And it sounds like that's dilution with the bay water, which is has a little bit of nitrogen in it naturally.
Yeah, it isn't. I'm sorry. I'm looking for something here. I just have out of reach. Apologize. I got kind of a pile of stuff here that I was reading. So, of course, what I'm going to want to find is going to be on the bottom. Yes, I mean, when they mix together, the seawater is definitely going to be diluting what comes out, but they're not all that much different, I guess, is what we're saying.
Okay. So, and but that brings that 21 milligrams per liter down to the 0.4 milligrams per liter. It's just the water that's swirling around.
Diluted, yeah.
At the end of the outfall pipe. Okay, yeah. And then that's why that same, so the 0.3 milligrams per liter we should see at the shore, is that in a plume, or is that like anywhere you sampled along the shore, that should be like an evenly mixed expected number?
Well, I think it's the worst case scenario is what they're referring to, because eelgrass is sensitive above 0.3, and that's mm-hmm. why the number is being referenced. I'm sure it's not consistent along the entire way.
Mm-hmm. But that's what the model would expect maximum.
Right.
In any place, so if you get a plume, say you've got a plume coming to a piece of the shore, and you're taking a sample there, you should expect to see 0.3 milligrams per liter at the worst.
That's the way the model is put together. Yes.
Okay. Great. Thanks.
Sure.
David Bond.
Can we go back to the dye testing? This project is going to be built in two stages. Wouldn't we want to see dye testing after the first stage is fully operational?
I don't think that there'd be any harm in getting that. I just don't know. Then you'd have an indication of what was going on. That's kind of what I was getting at, is if you wait to the very time that it's totally built out and do it, I mean, that could be a long time, if ever. And then in the meantime, you wouldn't have any feedback on the model. So, yes, I think it would be helpful, but I can't. Because this really isn't totally, this is getting a little pushing beyond my expertise on dispersion modeling, so I don't know what number you're going to get to that it's meaningful or not, but it's certainly a question that could be asked.
Other questions from Andy on this? So it sounds like we should have a further discussion on dye testing and timing for that. After phase one, before phase two is built,
if we can find
out, Mandy, what the effect of that would be, or what we'd be aiming for.
Okay, if we make a little more research on that,
we make the condition approval. Hugh Townsend.
Yeah, I thought I read somewhere that the Department of Marine Resources actually made a recommendation that the dye test have a time limit on it or something. So that if they never reached 7.7, that there would trigger a test at some point. And
they
I'm not
may
sure
have,
if that, I, how that if that tried was folded into the DEP permit or how that I'm not sure how they fit, but we're reading something like that.
Yeah, I did review all the DMR models. It's kind of the next thing on the memo and I didn't remember seeing that, but I'll double check.
Okay.
So if we're done and talking in general about the outfall, let's move on to the DMR